Well, then we will start. Oral history recording on the 15th of October 2013 with Elizabeth Wells, archivist.
Tom Edlin from the History Department.
And Hugh Bedford, Ashburnham, 55 to 60.
Perfect. We wanted to start by putting this interview into a little bit of context and wondered if you could tell us a little bit about your family, which has a long-standing relationship with Westminster School.
Yes, in fact, there are five of the family who were at Westminster starting in the 1870s with my grandfather, the Reverend Edwin Curtis Bedford, who became a rector in the City of London, and his brother, Francis Donkin Bedford, who trained as an architect, but in fact made his name as a children's book illustrator. And something that's quite interesting that's happened over the last 2 weeks is I had a letter from the Royal Academy wanting to use one or two of his illustrations for Christmas cards.
Oh, wonderful.
To be shown and sold in the shop at the Royal Academy. So, having been out of fashion for quite a long time, he's really coming back into fashion. And so, yes, it is good that. But we come on to the next generation now, which was my Uncle David, who was 8 years older than my father. And Uncle David, also up Ashburnham, 1916 to 21, and my father, 22 to 29. My father, I know a lot. Uncle David never spoke much of his time at Westminster, but my father was very involved with the school, living in London. He went to football matches and he was a member of the old Westminster Lodge, the Masonic Lodge, for many years. So he was always popping off to Westminster. He was also the head boy of Ashburnham in 1928, I presume. I've noticed that another of the students at Westminster with my father was Kim Philby, who, I looked this up, he was a King's Scholar. And in fact, they both went up to Trinity College, Cambridge at the same time, 1929. But you'll be pleased to hear my father wasn't the sixth man in the spy ring. Well, I don't think he was.
You might not know if he had been.
that's right.
Were they good friends at school and then at Trinity?
My father always told the story of how, yes, he was at school and Trinity with Kim Philby, but I don't think they were, no. Then really we come on to me, the next generation down into the 1950s, and I was also up Ashburnham, September 1955 was when I joined, with a lot of new boys that term. There weren't the twos and threes. I think there were about 14 of us joined that term, which was quite unusual, which is good in some ways because it shared out things like fagging. And if you were clever, you didn't do too much fagging. Something I learnt was that I think that when a monitor wanted a fag, they used to either shout into what was under then, and one of you went running to the monitor's room, or else they came out and collected you, and could you go and get some, say, milk for me from Tothill Street, from a shop in Tothill Street, or could you run an errand to Grant's or Rego's or something like that. So that was my first sort of meeting with the monitors of the house. But I think the first meeting with the monitors really was when you joined, you had a thing called a substance and a shadow, where I was the shadow and the substance was a boy a year older. And that was jolly useful because he showed you what was what. But also in the first 2 weeks, you had to pass this test. and it was the test that was the things like the names of the houses, the ties of the houses, the school monitors, the slang that was used in the school. And after 2 weeks, you went up one by one to the house monitors, and they tested you on all those different things, and I think I passed.
What happened if you failed? Did you know?
I'm not sure. Perhaps you had to sort of take it again and come back a week later. But one didn't really have a lot to do with the house monitors, and even less with the school monitors, of course, even though one knew their names. So it was a hierarchical system where you had the monitors, then the upper, the middle and the lower, and the under, the four studies. Mm. And you worked your way up within those studies. So that's how that worked then.
Did you all progress naturally as the school years went by? Or were there people who remained in under for longer than others?
I think you went up almost as one, yes, unless you were very bad. But no, I think, yes, that you worked your way up. Very much a ladder progression, yes.
And the sort of fagging, the tasks that you were asked to do, were they... Did you feel that they were sort of practical and useful, or do you think sometimes they were simply to demonstrate authority, to put you in your place?
I think a bit of both, really. Mm. Certainly, they sort of had a bit of power, and some of them, I'm sure, were worse than others at getting people to do jobs. I always tend to do things myself. If I want some butter or some milk or something, I would go out and do it. But so it is a sort of sign of authority, I think, that they'd made it to the top of the house.
Did you feel it changed over the time you were in school, by the time you became a senior boy? Do you think?
I think it had. Yeah, I think it had. Yes, I think one did notice that. When I started, of course, Ashburnham was in Little Dean's Yard. As you go in under the arch, we were tucked round to the right with Busby's on our right. So Busby's and then Ashburnham. And we were there for about a year and a half, I think. And then we moved over into the corner of Dean's Yard, past Church House and into that corner,
where I think they still are there.
Mm. Yeah. Did that move disrupt the house at all, or was it a seamless transition?
Well, it seemed to be pretty seamless, but I'm sure the housemaster, it, you know, these things, having worked in the bank, don't just happen. There is quite a lot of work involved, I'm sure, but one just turned up at the start of the new term in the corner of Dean. There it was, and you had your locker, and yes.
Did you find it was a bit isolating, being in that corner of Dean's Yard, away from the heart of the school?
I think it was, yes. Yes, you did feel cut off in that respect. I know when you were around Little Dean's Yard, there was always something going on. Mm. But in Dean's Yard, there was nothing going on, really. Out the back, in the studies, I remember, was Great Smith Street. And, of course, there's always a lot going on in Great Smith Street, but it's not the same as when you're dealing with the other boys. But I'm just trying to think the amount of time one spent in the house. Not a lot, really, as a day boy. You arrived in the morning, then you had Abby, and then the lesson started. You might come back to sort of collect more books for the next set of classes after, say, 11 o'clock, and then lunch, and then the afternoon either sport or more lessons. So one didn't spend a lot of time in the house, but it was cutting off, yes.
I wonder if anyone resented having to move over there, any of the older boys in Ashburnham who didn't want that change.
Well, I'm sure there were some of the Bolshy boys, but I can imagine there were some Bolshy boys there. But again, I personally didn't see that. But one always gets people who don't want to change. Mm.
Your housemaster was Denny Brock.
Denny Brock, he? Throughout the 5 years. Yes, he saw me right through. And a jolly good man he was too.
What was he like as a housemaster?
He was very approachable. Of course, when you're a 13-year-old, masters do seem, and he was quite tall, so he was quite an impressive figure. And yes, I think he ran a very good house. I didn't see any problems really myself in the house. And you saw him every month. I remember standing outside his study with, I think it's called a report or a marks card or something, where the masters had marked down the various for your month's work.
Yeah.
And you went in to see Mr. Brock, and he would go through and make some comments or... Yes, so that was pretty good, I thought. It's quite a big job being a housemaster, which, of course, you don't realise when you're a boy. You don't realise these things.
It just all happens.
It all happens around you. And as long as you get reasonable marks, then, you know, you're doing okay.
And, of course, the move of Ashburnham must have been part of the bigger jigsaw, which was putting the school back together after the bombing that it's sustained in the war. Were you conscious of there being a lot of building work around school? Or?
There was certainly... School itself was... I remember having to do O-level exams at an army drill hall on the way up Fields, Marsham Street or somewhere like that, because it would have been done, all the desks lined up school, but it wasn't. And I was trying to think what was being done, because I still think it had a temporary roof at that stage.
Mm-hmm.
But for the, because it's superb now, hall, I mean, yes, school is superb. And it must have been quite a long business, and it must have been out of action for a long time. But I don't think the big work was done at that stage. I thought it might be something to do with the shell at the top end.
Yes,
but I'm not sure.
Because that was opened in 1960, wasn't it, I think?
The shell was.
Yeah, when the Queen visited. So
That's right, yes, I remember that. So it might have been in 58 or something, which is when I took my O-levels.
Yeah.
I can remember we having to to go and sit the exams in an army drill hall.
So you were there when the Queen visited and school was reopened in 1960?
Yes, the quattrocentenary year with the service in Westminster Abbey, and also the CCF inspection by the Duke of Gloucester. I remember that. Where, you could imagine the preparations for that went on.
Was everyone very nervous?
I think, I'm sure Ron French, who was in charge of the CCF, he must have had some sleepless nights, yes, because the preparations were quite extensive, and you were having to march on grass, because it was held around in Vincent Square, on the grass in Vincent Square, and you can't hear yourself marching. And of course we all had to, we were inspected by the Duke marching up and down. And then also, we had to march around a parade while he took the salute. But, I hope we had a band, because a band always helps on these occasions to get the timing going. But I remember that, and I remember the quattrocentenary, and I remember the Queen, yes.
Was being in the CCF compulsory at that stage? Or did you?
Yes, yes it was. Well, you could also join the Scouts.
Oh, I see.
You could, Army, Navy or Air Force or the Scouts. And in my first year, one didn't join the CCF. It was only when I was in the second year. What we did the first year, and I was thinking about this, on a Friday afternoon when the corps took place, we used to go on trips, organised trips, to places like the British Museum, or Dr. Johnson's house, or the Tate. Perhaps that was the start of my liking for music or for art. I don't know what sort of triggers these things, but we went out on a Friday afternoon. We also, on a Saturday morning, we went to the Robert Mayer concerts at the Royal Festival Hall, which were concerts put on for children, which I think still take place, but I don't know if they're called Robert Mayer, but it's the same sort of thing. But the festival hall had only been open 4 years then, so it was quite early days for the festival hall.
Were there lots of small groups going on these outings? Do you remember how they were organised?
No, I think it was really probably only the Transitus forms, and I was in Transitus B, so perhaps it was Transitus B went, say, to the British Museum. I was going to say the Museum of London. I don't think they were open at that time. So it went to the British Museum or Dr. Johnson's house. Though there was A, B and C, and we probably went in different directions, because we would have been quite a herd, I think, to try and manage a big number of young boys.
Did the South Bank make a big impression? Because, as you said, it can't have been, it was all very, very new, all of that construction.
Yes, that was a jolly good... And you missed two lessons, of course.
Even better.
So you got back about 12:30, but it was lunchtime, and then the afternoon you went to sport. So, yes, it did, and I've enjoyed music ever since, I must say, yes. So that was a good introduction.
Do you think that had more of an impact than music and drama and things that were going on within the school at the time?
I wasn't really a musician, so I wasn't so involved in the music side and making music, even though there were some very good musicians in the house. I remember there's a chap called Wetton, who was up Ashburnham, and he actually became a professional conductor. A little chap called Arnold. He was almost as big as his double bass, I think he played, or else he played a cello. But I'm sure music now is a higher profile than it was when I was. I think it was Arnold Foster was the chap who was in charge of music when I was there. But I'm sure it's a much bigger thing now.
I think that's probably true,
I think also across you've the board.
I think, across the board.
Yes. Which is good.
It's wonderful. And then some things have diminished, like CCF, which is no longer part of the school life.
But certainly art I did from my time in Transitus B with... Mr. Spall.
Leslie Spall.
Les Spall, yes. He was the art master, and he was a great enthusiast, because he must have got some pretty ropey bits of work, but some of this modern stuff might have been the hits of the future, you don't know. But yes, I remember the art. It was a single lesson a week.
So not a great deal of time in the timetable to do the art, not much time dedicated to it.
No.
What were the facilities like? Was the art department in Ashburnham House at that time?
Yes, it was. When I was there, the main sort of teaching block was on the right of Ashburnham House. And is it still there?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
about four floors of classrooms. Yep. And the art room was one of those rooms.
Which must have been quite a nice building to work in, with all the wonderful views and the sort of inspiration you could get from the buildings around you. Did that inform your
art? Well, it's an awful thing to say, but when you're at school, you don't really appreciate the lovely... I was thinking that it's only when you get older that you realise what a wonderful sort of vista Little Dean's Yard is, with those buildings of the houses, and Ashburnham House on the other side. and how lucky you are to be there. But when you're at the school, you don't really think like that.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of going into the classroom and opening your books and that sort of thing. But my first sort of form master was a Mr. Moyes, who again was a very tall man, but when you're 13, and he can only have been about 20, but he certainly was an impressive figure, and I think it was probably his first teaching job. But of course you don't know that at the time when you go in as a class. But he was the one that sort of showed us the ropes and sort of got us on our way, he and Mr. Brock.
Which other teachers do you remember particularly fondly from the classroom side of your experience?
Going up, the teacher I remember the best was when I was in the fifth form, 5B. I went up Transitus B, 5B, Shelby. Mr. Moylan, who taught us Latin, and he ruled like a rod of iron. You didn't dare be late, because he had this thing, that'll be a shilling, laddie. And he used, but thinking, I find it difficult to believe he'd charge a shilling in those days, but it rolls off the tongue quite well. I wonder if it was a penny or something, but all the money, and he had his chart up and he marked it off, and he got a lot of money by the end of the term. If you did anything wrong, and if you were late for his class, so in some ways he ruled by fear, but I learnt so much Latin with him. But every week he had a test, a Latin test, a written test, and according to the marks you move place within the class. So I know the table that was just in front of him was 1, 2 and 3. In the year I made number 3 once, but then you went down again. It was usually the same 3 who were 1, 2 and 3. And one of those was Alan Borg.
Who
became the director of the Imperial War Museum and the V&A, and I think, I don't know if he still is, but he was a governor of the school.
He still is a governor.
Yes. He still is a governor.
Yes.
A very nice man, very nice man, but he was one of the stars of 5B.
It's interesting that Mr. Moylan wanted the best pupils in front of him. Nowadays, we'd put the bad ones in front of us, because we wouldn't trust them so much.
No, in fact, number 20 was right at the back, as far as you can get. I think I got down to about number 18. But you could work your way up quite quickly again by getting good marks in the next week. And it's a jolly good way of... Well, it's a good way of teaching, because you really do concentrate, I must say. So... He was the one that I can remember probably best. He was also the careers master. He became the careers master. So I saw him again when I was 17, 18. But I wasn't taught by him again after the fifth form. When I went into the Shell doing Latin again, I think the teacher there was Mr. Craven. Ted Craven, who I think became headmaster of Ashburnham later. Maybe not immediately after Mr. Brock.
The next but one.
Now, the secret with him was you could distract him to talk about his convoy work in the war. And the great thing was to get off the Latin and to tell us about when he... had this terrible time in the North Atlantic with the convoys, and you could almost get a whole lesson out of talking convoys. But again, you know, he was a very nice man. I often feel, though, that I think the teachers these days are probably better. I felt looking back now, even though you don't realise it, quite a few of the masters had come out of the army or come out of the services, which was only 10 years before, and had sort of drifted into teaching. You had the old boys. There was a Mr. Simpson, I think, who was a classics master, who would have been there pre-war and gone through the war. Mm. Then you had your ones who were who had been in the war and had come on to the school after the war. And then you had the younger ones, and they, in the main, did very well. I was thinking of Mr. Rogers and Mr. Woodhouse, who were both young masters when I, in about 1958, I think, they came and went on to be headmasters.
Yes.
So I think they were able to start getting a good younger group in, say, from 1958, 1960. But in 1955, I think, perhaps they sort of could have had some teachers who had been better, probably at teaching.
Were you interested in people's army service, what they'd done in the Second World War? I mean, I know you spoke about it as a distraction, but were you genuinely...
He was the only one who liked to talk about it, and we knew this, and so we played on it. Mm. But in the main, people didn't talk about their army service, no. But I would imagine people like Ron French, that sort of person, would have had a good army career.
Yes. Well, we now know a lot about Denny Brock and his time in the Navy.
Yes, a lot more than we did.
You see, because I don't know anything about his service, even though he was my housemaster 5 years. But he was the outward bound man, wasn't he? And that's where Cedric Harbour and people like and Michael Brough, they used to go on the outward bound trips with Denny Brock and Ron French and these sort of people. Mm. And Mr. Shepherd, I think, went on them as well.
Did you ever go on any yourself? Or was that not something you wanted
But
to
I
do?
Did go on a corps camp. Up to Catterick in about 1957. I can remember one or two things, but the tent commander was Corin Redgrave. I can't see him. Can't see him being a great army man, but he was the tent commander.
It's probably quite fun.
So about eight of us in the tent. Yes. So I remember that. So, yes, I was very much in that part of the corps. Yes.
You mentioned that you then came across Mr. Moylan again as the careers master.
Yes.
Was this something that was talked about a lot at the school in those days? Did they offer a lot of careers advice for pupils?
It was a bit weak, really. I don't think they really took enough trouble in advising, having perhaps people in or... You know, somebody from the city, from banking or teaching, to tell you a bit more of what it was like on the outside, because I found it harder going from school to the bank than I did going from prep school to Westminster. I found that was quite, and perhaps it's because you are at school and you go through from one school to the next. But with the bank, yes, it takes some getting used to. It is a different culture altogether. And they didn't really prepare you for that, even though in the end you muddle through or you get through all right.
What made you decide to work at the bank? What appealed to you?
I'd wanted to go into the city, and there were three things. There was my father was in insurance. He was in Lloyd's, so I could have gone to Lloyd's, or I could have gone to the Stock Exchange. But I went to the bank, really, I think, because I had an uncle who was in the bank. And he was quite enthusiastic about it. And so that was the route I took.
Mm. Was it unusual at that stage amongst your peers not to go to university?
No.
No? A lot of them
most went. Yeah. Most of us didn't go. Ah. Which is extraordinary now.
Mm.
Mm. If you're in the seventh form, I'm afraid I only got to the sixth. But if you were in the seventh and were in the scholarship stream,
yes.
Then, yes, they went to Christchurch or to Trinity. Mainly to Oxford and Cambridge, of course.
Mm.
But I went straight from school into the bank.
Had you been intending that sort of career for yourself for some time? Did you know that that was the sort of career that you wanted for yourself?
Not really. I was a so-called scientist at Westminster, physics, chemistry and maths. I was a better chemist than I was physicist, really. And I don't know why I thought, well, perhaps chemistry's not for me. I think I'll go into the city. But I don't know at what stage. I think fairly late on, actually, when I was in the sixth form, age 17, 18.
And did you find that, you talk about the adjustment to working in the bank, the big change from being at school. Had the school given you any of the skills that you really needed in starting work, in terms of the actual things that you had to do?
I would say so, yes. Even though you don't realise what is going on at school, I think the sort of training and the structure, the bank is very structured, the same as school is structured, and I quite like that environment. So, yes, I think, and it's like the bank, you don't realise when you're in the bank, when you leave the bank, you're quite good at doing a lot of things, and I think school's the same. It does give you quite a broad outlook on life, and that was very helpful.
Mm. I suppose working with other people as well, in that sort of environment.
Yes. Of course, it was the first time I'd come up against a mass of girls, which is another factor.
Yes.
There were hundreds of them.
Were a lot of people working in the bank as secretaries, or...?
Quite a lot of secretaries, yes, but also they were doing lots and lots of other jobs that were going on, yes.
It's interesting, you don't often think about that. You think that the Bank of England in the 1960s would be quite a male-dominated environment, but...
Far from it. Dare I say, it was very male at the top.
Mm.
Yeah.
But lower down, there were lots and lots of girls. Which, of course, was very different to the 30s and 40s, where, to be a girl in the bank was quite rare.
Mm.
Then that all changed, I think, after the war, probably.
It's interesting, just going back a moment, because you talk about having studied maths and physics and chemistry.
Yes.
And then you had said that your most memorable teacher, of course, taught you Latin. Right. So does that say something about the science teaching at Westminster in the 1950s?
No, the science teaching was very good. There was a Mr. Crumpler and a Mr. Foxcroft and a Mr. Stokoe. And I think they were all very good teachers, but they weren't so charismatic, perhaps.
Mm. Right.
You know, they were able to put their subject across, but perhaps they didn't fire me with, this is the thing for me.
Mm.
I only know one Crump story, which is when they asked him if he was infallible. And he said, no, I once thought I'd made a mistake, but later discovered I was right after all. Science in those days was in Sutcliffe's. The building we call Sutcliffe's in Great College Street.
That's right, yes.
Were the facilities good for for learning science in that building, because it had been extended, hadn't it?
Well, about 1957, it was a brand new, spanking new science laboratories. Yeah. And we were very lucky to be going into such a wonderful laboratory. And all the Bunsen burners were laying over. It was great. Mm. And so you were thought that this is, you know, all this is really something.
It must have been quite exciting.
And a lecture theatre, you know. Yes. I remember that the teaching was done on tiers, like a lecture theatre, as opposed to everybody on the same level.
I think sometimes we get the impression, particularly earlier in the 20th century, that there was a real hierarchy in the school, and that the classics were the top, and people who studied science and the science teachers were seen as being lower down the pecking order.
And that was early, yes.
But it had begun to change.
When I was at Westminster, science was on the up. It was quite a popular subject. There were lots of scientists.
Yes, I suppose that sense of hierarchy, it was very much a rigid decision about which side of the curriculum you were going to be on, wasn't it? You know, whether you were going to be a classicist or a scientist.
Looking back, I wish I'd been a historian. I find history much more interesting. I find history very interesting. And I wish I'd been a historian. Oh, well, I don't know.
Well, you're speaking to two historians.
Yes, because you sort of, the decisions were almost made before you realised you'd made a decision in a way, weren't they, at that time? You know,
Yes, I think that's true. Yes, it's funny how, dare I say it, one sort of drifts into these things. Mm. And once you're in, you swim and it's difficult to get out. Mm. People very rarely change courses. Once you'd made that push, say, it's rather amazing, but someone I haven't mentioned, another boy, was a chap called Colin Bird. Now, Colin and I started in the same form, up Ashburnham, exactly the same time. We left the school the same time. We went into the Bank of England on the same day. And 56 years later, we're still the greatest of friends. And you'll see old Colin in some of these pictures, because he was a great cricketer too. But he and I have always been together. So the first 3 years I was always with him, but he went into modern languages. And so he went off in that direction with Dr. Garden and Dr. Sanger, those sorts of people. Whereas I had Mr. Crumpler and Mr. Stokoe. But I've never worked with him in the bank over 30 plus years. I never was in the same office as him, even though we've always been, we've been very close together. So I think he sort of drifted into modern languages, because if you ask him anything in French now, he doesn't know what we're talking about.
Same,
I don't think he'd like me saying that.
We were talking about Ashburnham and your life in the house.
Yes.
What sort of house events were there which, if you like, helped give more of a sense of house identity? Because you talked about spending most of the day, obviously, in lessons and station and so on. Mm. What sort of events were there that were house events?
Well, the main ones are sport, of course, is representing your house against the other houses, of which I did quite a lot. Socially, not much. I don't know about eating lunch together in Ashburnham House. I think that might have been quite unusual, because I think the other houses used to eat in College Hall. And I always remember a little wooden sort of trolley being wheeled across about 1:45 from College Hall to Ashburnham House, which was our lunch. Mm. And as a house, we ate within the ground floor of Ashburnham House. And that's a good way of bringing all the house together. There weren't many occasions where all the house was together, and that was probably, except when Mr. Brock wanted to talk to us or something, as a house. I think lunch was the only other place. And I was trying to remember how we knew where to sit. And I think that was also done on a hierarchical base. Mm. You started at the bottom table on benches and you worked your way up, and Mr. Brock and the monitors sat at the top. Whether that's changed, I don't know now.
Well, I'm afraid it has. Yes. We only, each house only has a house lunch once a fortnight now. So most of the time there's no seating plan or house sense to lunch at all. It's canteen style, which I think is a great shame.
So where's that? In College Hall?
And it's in College Hall and in Grant's dining room, which has been extended.
Right.
So there were the two main dining rooms. I think we've lost a lot, actually, losing the house lunch as a sort of daily event.
And it's only really hierarchical in the sense that the younger boys eat together in College Hall and the older pupils.
Yeah. So it's age group rather than house now. Mm.
So it's mixing within the school.
Yeah. I think we've definitely lost something.
Yes, it's rather a shame that in some ways, because I think the house identity is quite important. Mm. And to represent your house is quite something, and represent the school is even better, of course. Mm.
Do tell us about the cricket, because you've got some wonderful photographs of the cricket team.
Yes.
You talked about playing cricket. Was that very important as part of your school life?
When I went to Westminster, I played a lot of cricket at prep school. I'd never played football. I'd only played rugby, which was a disadvantage, but I wasn't a bad cricketer. I was a batsman, and one of those is the under-14s, then the junior Colts, then the Colts. Yes, we went off in a bus when we went away to places like Aldenham School and Epsom College and places like that. Plus, we also played up at Vincent Square. So, yes, it is quite important. And I enjoyed my cricket. I enjoyed the house cricket too. And we did quite well as a house cricket team.
Did Ashburnham ever win?
Got to the final once.
Very good.
But it's probably harder now because there's so many more houses.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact,
but because there are so many more houses, some of them are very bad at cricket now. That's
So that helps. But perhaps the best new boy in our year was David Roy. Mm. Now, I don't know whether that rings a bell, but David...
We know David. David's son was in
Angus,
my year. Angus was in my year. He was in Ashburnham. So.
And I'm but seeing David next
week. He was one of the 14 or 15 new boys, and he was a very good footballer, and he was in the first 11 in his second, almost his first year, or second year, certainly. And... he wasn't such a good cricketer, even though he made the first 11. I can't think how.
But should we tell him that?
No, don't tell him that. David won't buy. But he was a jolly good footballer, and that was his sport. But he's also given such a lot back to the school. The same as another chap up Rigo's, Michael Bourne.
Yes.
Well, Michael Bourne is certainly a governor of the school. Mm-hmm. I think David is as well. But the other thing I find interesting, they were both entranced at sea. And they've given so much back to the school in their different ways. Because we did have some quite clever people in our house. Had a chap called Dan McKenzie. Who is a fellow of King's College, Cambridge. And he's an expert, he's a world expert on earthquakes and volcanoes. Mm-hmm. And he's a fellow at Cambridge. Then there was Tony Vogel, who was an actor. Have you heard of him at all?
Yes,
through
heard,
your...
Yeah, it does ring a bell.
Yes. and Michael Brough, mm-hmm. through his microsurgery, sadly dead now. He died aged about 60, I think. He was at the Middlesex Hospital. Mm. Did you know Colin, do you? Colin
yes,
Brough.
I know his yes. brother, yes. It's fascinating the way the paths are so divergent, and yet at the same time, and I'm sure you're right, you say you weren't conscious necessarily of making those big decisions that led you to where you went and later
yes,
life.
Yes, I think that,
yeah.
yes, yes. It's funny, it's like points in a railway. You're shunted off in a direction and it's jolly difficult to get back on track again. With the sport, I played football for that house, but only up to 16 level. Then there was another very good goalkeeper came into the house. So if you weren't good enough for Vincent Square, you went to Grove Park, which I believe the school doesn't have now. I don't think so, but we went to Grove Park for football about twice or three times a week. And what I should have done was to play squash. But squash was always regarded, if you can't do anything else, play squash. So I thought, well, I'm slightly better than that. I'll crack on with football. But I should have really played squash because I was quite good as a batsman.
Yeah, the eye-hand coordination. Yeah.
I was quite a good runner. Mm. Yeah. And I should have kept going because that was played at Dolphin Square. Mm. Mm. So you went down the road and got your afternoon's exercise and that was it.
Was that with Theo Zinn who took boys to squash?
I think you might be right there, yes. Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful day.
I seem to remember him,
yes.
Because we interviewed him and he said that he took boys to squash because it was the closest he could get to having no involvement with station at all. That was obviously how squash
that,
was
yes,
seen.
Yes, so that's... But there must be one or two good squash players around who sort of did want to play squash. But there are also some who just had to turn up. What the school were good at was fencing. Mm. They were very good at fencing when I was there. But I can't think who the master in charge was.
I don't know.
I thought it might have been Dr. Sanger or something like that.
Yes.
Zinn and Sanger were both, yes, had an interest in the sort of fringe sports. But certainly fencing wasn't all that fringe. It was quite... And one of the best fencers was Alan Borg.
Mm,
he
yes.
was a very good fencer for the school.
I wanted to ask, you talked a bit about lunch. I always ask this question.
Yes.
What was the food like? Was the food good? Can you remember?
I think you ate what was put in front of you.
Can you remember what a typical lunch would consist of? Would you have had a...
Certainly roast beef. Mm. I can remember the beef cut and, yes, and potatoes, I suppose, and a green. But I can't remember what was for puddings.
But there were
perhaps
puddings.
It was bread and butter pudding. Mm.
So very sort of traditional
English school.
Oh, yes.
It was very traditional fare.
Yeah.
But having come from a prep school when there was rationing between 1950 and 55, certainly, I just wondered, because the food wasn't very good there either, and perhaps Westminster it was slightly better. But I can't remember about the food. I think it's quite well... Now you say it's all...
It's
no, it
much
done
more
it
choice.
In a buffet, yeah. choice thing.
Yeah. Very varied. We now have international theme days. Which doesn't go down well with everyone, actually. It's very interesting, because obviously you're part of an Ashburnhamite family.
Yes,
And you mentioned the Roys, who of course also...
Oh, yes.
Angus always used to tell me how he was part of an Ashburnhamite
yes,
dynasty.
Yes.
Was that something that... seemed important, the idea of that ongoing house affiliation within
Well, it does to me, yes, yes. Yes, I like that link.
And to your father as well, was he pleased
very much. Oh,
that you were
yes,
part of the
he
house?
Was, yes, yes, very much so.
Were you conscious of the school before you... were you conscious of the school before you joined? Was it always clear that you were going to be part of Westminster?
Yes, yes. Yes. My father would have taken me to matches and that sort of thing when I was come back from school. I can remember the entrance exam, my first trip almost to Westminster and going to sit the entrance exam and being interviewed. I presume it was by the headmaster. I don't know whether he interviewed every boy just for a short time.
Mm. Probably did.
In a marks, you were pulled out from an exam and... There were the two rooms on either side. Is one the Busby Library?
Busby Library, yes, and the John Sargent room.
Oh, that's right, yes. Yeah.
And I suppose that would have been Walter Hamilton, who was
the headmaster.
Yes, he was the headmaster.
When you
first arrived.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Mm. Yes, yeah.
Was he a very distant figure? Or did you feel that you had much contact with him?
I didn't have any contact at all, and he was very distant.
Yeah.
Yes. But he was a very clever man, I hear, and went on to be master of one of the Oxford or Cambridge colleges, didn't he?
Mm.
And then we had John Carlton.
Mm. Yes.
Now, he actually taught me English, yes. When I was in Transitus B, he was the English master. There was a classroom as you go up school at the end, on the right.
Yes.
There were two rooms. Mr. Hamilton was on the left, I think it was, and... John Carlton was on the right, as one looks at the shell of the school.
Yes, yes. What we now call the Markham Room.
Yes.
But when John Carlton took over as headmaster, what was the sort of feeling in the school about the fact that the undermaster had been promoted to be headmaster and it was an internal appointment? Did that make it all very easy, straightforward? Or?
Well, again... I can imagine there was quite a lot of chatter higher up the school. I think I was about 14, 15 when he took over, because Walter Hamilton was only there for about a year, I think. So I'm sure there was a lot of talk with the other masters in the common room and that sort of thing. Personally, I think it's a good idea to get someone fresh in from outside, with some new ideas, because he was a boy there and undermastered the Master of the Queen's Scholars. He'd gone right through the whole school. But that's just my own opinion.
Did you feel that anything changed within the school when he became headmaster? Because sometimes with a change in headmaster, you do see
not really
different shifts.
No.
Interesting.
Not
yeah,
really.
I mean, I suppose he was in a way the continuity.
Well exactly. It certainly was that, yes.
And when you got up to the sixth form, did
yes.
you have any more contact with the headmaster then than you had had
none at all.
Previously?
No.
Yeah.
It was really with Mr. Brock, your housemaster. And I was thinking, I never actually went into any of the other houses in my 5 years.
Mm.
Which is a shame, really, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Was that because
whether
it just
that's
wasn't
whether
done
we
thing?
Were over the other side of Dean's Yard, or whether it was just that one didn't go into Busby's or Rego's or Grant's?
I have heard that said before.
Yes.
That it wasn't.
It's definitely something that's changed. I think that boys and it do now go into other houses quite a lot.
Perhaps the only one I went into a bit was because there were sort of rooms there, was Wren's.
Yes.
Mm.
So is Wren's still on that?
Yeah, Dryden's and Wren's are both.
Oh,
Dryden's we've got two floors
there.
Now.
Okay, yes.
There's an extra story.
But certainly there were classrooms along there. And that's where you are, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
You're in that section, yes. Yeah. So it is quite a big section.
Yeah,
that,
yes.
Yes, I suppose that must have increased the sense of house spirit as well, the fact that you weren't always popping into Rego's or popping into Busby's.
That's
it
right,
made you feel
yes.
more of an Ashburnhamite, possibly.
Yeah, Yeah. Mm. You were very much of your house.
Mm. I have a personal, a great obsession with school ties.
Oh,
can
yeah.
I ask you about school
oh,
ties?
Oh, yeah.
Let's get school ties. Because I'm very well aware that over the last 20 years, certain ties have changed. What were the Ashburnham house ties?
Blue.
They're still the same. That, good. Something hasn't blue. Changed.
Yes.
Do you remember the other house colours? I'm putting on. This is your induction test for your first week.
This is a difficult one for me now. But this is the sort of thing I was asked at
yes.
this test.
Yeah,
quite
yeah.
right. I remember the pink and the half pink. I thought yes. you might be asking me yeah. about that.
Well, we can stick with that if you
Where's
want.
Where's Grant's brown?
It's a sort of reddish brown and pale silvery blue.
And Rigo's orange?
Rigo's is orange, yes. Yeah.
That's because I can't remember that one.
Sort of purple.
Purple. No, I don't.
But the pinks are interesting because looking at your house photographs,
yes.
although they're black and white, you can see that boys are wearing what we call the out-of-season full pinks, which is the black tie
oh, yes,
with the
yes.
double pink stripe.
Yeah.
None of them are wearing the, as it were, the full pinks pink tie.
No, one just didn't wear a full
yeah.
pink tie.
Yeah. Or the pink and white.
No.
Because that changed at some point in terms of what boys wore on a day-to-day basis. So if you had full pinks, you wore the black tie with the double pink stripe, did you? Which we call out of season.
I thought a full pink might have been a full pink.
Mm.
And a half pink was the black and pink. And a third was a zigzag black line
oh,
going
right.
across a pink.
Because that's what we call out of season half pinks. We must have changed something somewhere along the line.
I think that's right. But the only time I remember boys actually wearing full pinks
mm.
was, say, the first date going to Henley.
Yes.
Where they always
thing.
Look very smart with their pink ties mm. and the pink blazers.
Yes. Yes, because I remember being told by someone that it had always been what you wore on the day of the match or the day of the fixture.
Yep.
And you didn't wear it to lessons. And at some point that changed. I'm not quite sure why.
Mm.
But it looks as if quite a lot of the boys are wearing house ties.
House ties.
Yeah.
Yes, I think a lot, yes.
Did you get awarded the house tie for being part of the team for
yeah.
house sporting
yes.
competitions
yes.
and that sort of thing?
Yes, so you didn't get it automatically
yeah.
when you became.
And were there other ways of getting it? Was it mostly for sport or did you get it for other
sport,
activities?
I think, no, yeah. sport.
Yeah. Because now you can get it for all sorts of other things.
And that was just sport.
And there were just two, there was a junior one and a senior one. Is that right for the house ties?
House tie, no, it was only
just one house tie. Because then they had two, and now we've got three different levels. So it's all very complicated.
For every house.
For every house, yes.
Plus the school ties.
Plus the school ties.
Gosh, the school shop must be
They're
doing well.
Very well.
This is a bit like these football teams.
Yeah.
You know, you have a
yeah.
new strip every yeah. year.
It is. You can have a new tie every term. Sorry, I shouldn't get onto ties here. I have this great interest in school ties.
The other thing I enjoyed was the long distance race in the athletics.
Oh, the...
For a month during the spring term, I call it, at the end month, they stopped the football and we had athletics. And we used to have the long distance race between Barnes and Putney along the towpath.
Yes. Yes.
Is that still...
We still do
change?
That. We do it in September now.
September.
So it's at the start of the year. And then we have the Bringsty Relay.
We still have that.
In the Lent term.
Because I ran that about three times. And that's still held on Wimbledon Common.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, we have the athletic sports in the summer. So each term there is...
Oh, you have it in the summer now, as opposed to the
yeah.
end of the spring.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Mm. So each term there's something... There's a sort of house athletic or running competition.
Mm. And they're hotly contested, aren't
they?
They are.
There's a, you know,
they're
it's,
very
it's,
competitive about it.
There's a lot of house spirit about it.
Yes, mm. we had a thing called a standards competition. where if you achieved a certain time or through over a certain length or distance, you got 5 points, and then you had, if you got half that, 3 points or 1 point. And this was done on an individual basis, and then the house totals were all added up. And yes, you had a senior and a junior house cup, and that was every house taking part. And that again was good because, you know, well, probably because you were representing your house and trying as hard as you could.
Do you remember which house used to win in your year group, as it were?
I always think it's Grants. Grants seem to do rather well.
Yes.
They must have had one or two good...
How unfair.
Rigo's had a very good runner when I was there called Roger Given. And he was the under-16 British champion at 800 metres, or probably 880 yards in those days.
Yes.
And, of course, in the sports, against other schools and in the school sports, he won everything from 200 to a mile, put in Roger Given, and he won the lot. But he was a very good runner.
Was Denny Brock very keen on all those athletic competitions?
Yes, he was. Yes, he was always he was very supportive of the house events, and they were really to do with sport. I can't think of any other. We didn't have... Oh, we had singing competitions.
Oh!
But I wasn't the greatest of singers. So I wasn't a Gareth Malone type or anything like that. But I would think they're quite popular now. Probably more popular.
The house singing. Do tell us about the house singing in your time. Because I shouldn't say too much, but the house singing has been banned. Because it was too out of control.
It was too popular. A victim of its own success.
Too popular. So... I wonder what it was like in your time, the house singing.
Well, it was house singing, and you had a house group, you know. Mm. I can't remember who the conductor was. It was probably this chap Wetton, who had become a professional conductor. He's probably the chap who sort of had the baton. And I can't remember the types of songs. It was probably a mix of sort of serious songs and ones that have a jolly good tune, and it's a jolly good sing song, but I can't really remember. But yes, it was, and every house had a choir, and it was held up school in front of the shell, and then you also had the individual music, you know, where you had the cello or the violin or the piano. So, but it was really, I was thinking of the house choirs. Which was the house event.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's a terrible pity we've banned it.
It'll come back.
I think it will.
It's been banned so many times and has always come back.
Once it's calmed down and the pupils don't remember how it
was last time. So, did you have a house concert as well where you had all the instrumentalists playing?
No.
Because that's certainly something that's increased a lot.
I'm sure. What now you... Because I think music, and it's great, is a much higher profile. And you've got the music school now, haven't you, too?
Yes.
Which is great. I don't know where they did the rehearsing, but they all seem to tuck themselves away somewhere with their double basses and their trumpets.
It was rather the way, wasn't it? Everything seemed to happen somewhere, and you're never quite sure.
It was tucked away. I know they disappeared down a corridor, and you never saw them again.
Because, I mean, in the... You mentioned, of course, there was Ashburnham House with the main sort of teaching rooms, and then rooms in Wren's corridor. Were there any other parts of the school that were used for teaching at that time? Or was it those two, and the rooms around the school?
But none of the other houses were used as sort of teaching houses. It was poor old Wren's who I remember going in there. No, the teaching really was done in that block by the side of Ashburnham House, where all the notice boards were.
And it's amazing to think how much more space we have
for what I find incredible, because everybody wants space around Westminster, whether it be MPs or another government department to open, another office block required, but the school managed to get their comic, which is great.
Yes, we've been very lucky, I think, in the past 10 years.
Yes, I think it's terrific. What about gym? Do they still do gym?
They do in the fifth form, although I wouldn't necessarily describe it as classic gym.
And where's that done?
We've now got...
It used to be in the cloisters,
well,
you see.
Well, we've still got the old gym in the cloisters, but we've got a new sports centre.
Yes.
As of last year.
Yep.
Near Vincent Square.
Oh.
The old Royal Horticultural Society Hall.
Oh, that's interesting.
The Lawrence Hall.
Yes.
Which is amazing and absolutely enormous. So things like fencing and
yes.
badminton and rock climbing and indoor football and all the rest of cricket nets. But we've still got the old gym, which is mostly now used for exams, actually.
I think it's slightly up in the air as to what fate it will have, because we don't need it in quite the same way as we once did.
There are many possibilities for what we could use the space for.
So it's still down by Little Cloister,
yes.
is it?
Yes, it's amazing. It is
really?
Still there, yes.
It's the most remarkable place in the school, really.
It's incredible. Mm-hmm.
And people are astonished when I show it to them and say, up until 2 years ago, this was our sports centre, this was our main sporting facility, and they can't believe it. But
So the Horticultural Hall is a wonderful acquisition, isn't it? I didn't realise you had that. Mm.
Yes, we've got it on an 1,000-year lease. They weren't allowed, according to their deeds, to sell it. That's 1,000.
1,000 years
is comfortable.
I think that'll see us out here. I think that'll be all right. 1,000 years. But the boys have to move around a lot more now, don't they?
Yes.
Because did you say there was something in Smith Square? Is it a?
We've got the science block is just off Smith Square, the new science block.
Yes.
And then we have a teaching block the other side of Dean's Yard, number 3, Dean's Yard.
Which is as you come in, it's just on the right-hand side.
And then the old science block is used for art and geography and classics.
Oh, is it? Yes.
Sutcliffe's. And then you've got the music centre and the theatre, the drama centre, halfway towards the science block.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they have to move around a lot, and you've got only 5 minutes between lessons. So.
It's amazing, really.
I suppose the thing we say at this stage is that, is there anything you wanted to say that we haven't given you the opportunity to say? Is there something you're expecting us to ask and we haven't asked?
No, it's very interesting just to hear how the school develops. With the girls, do they have a girls' house, or are they...
There are girls in every house.
There are girls in every house.
Day girls. The boarding girls
are
in one of 3 houses. So Busby's and Liddell's both have a girls' boarding floor,
right,
a separate section for the girls.
Yep.
And Purcell's is a house for boarding girls and day boys. So the boys are all day boys downstairs, and upstairs is just
and
the girls.
And where's that house situated?
And it's in the monastery now.
Monastery,
it used to be in
it?
Barton Street, and we've acquired St Edward's House, the Cowley Fathers building on the corner of Great College Street, and Purcell's has moved in there. So we've got rather a good building for a boarding house, really, because it's very
beautiful.
Well designed.
It's a lovely house, isn't
and
it?
A chapel. So that's rather nice as well. A school chapel in addition to our regular use of the Abbey.
And do you still have Abbey every morning?
Twice a week.
No. Twice a week now.
Mondays and Fridays. And Latin prayers
Latin
on Wednesday.
Latin prayers?
Wednesday morning.
Wednesday morning?
Yeah.
Up school.
And still up school. Mm.
So it's still a routine, but we don't have quite as much
as
we used to have.
It's hard for us to have as much time in the Abbey because they need to open for the visitors now.
Oh, that's right. So, yes. That's
and putting out 750 chairs is quite time-consuming.
Yes, because the number of boys and girls has grown. It's almost twice.
Yeah.
I think there were 400.
Mm. And that, of course, is part of the answer to the question about space around the school and all these new buildings.
Yeah. I think it's amazing how it all fits in around Little Dean's yard.
Mm.
Really.
There's so much there in a very tight space.
Mm. Yeah, there is.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel crowded.
No, it sort of feels quite spacious. And only three of the houses out of 11 are not in Little Dean's yard. There's Purcell's, obviously, in the monastery, and then Ashburnham has Milnes next door to it.
Oh, does it?
Yes. 5A,
next door building. Yes.
So that, I think, has changed Ashburnham's feeling of isolation a bit. There are two of them over there now.
So is that a day boy house?
That's a day house as well.
Yes. It is.
And, yeah, they're sort of friends and rivals, shall we say, next door.
No, when I came from prep school, I was the first boy ever to go to Westminster.
From my prep school.
Oh. So, I always remember the headmaster. I used to blush quite a lot at prep school. And the headmaster said, "You've gone the colour that your new school will be, Hugh." And of course it was pink.
A nice pale pink.
Yeah, it is a pale pink. Yeah, that's something.
Right. Mm. Well, then there's nothing else to say except thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you.